Okay, so just to refresh your memory, we've been learning the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer's account of the making of Rabbi Eliezer, one of the greatest Tanaim of all time. You'll recall that he was born to a family of wealthy farmers, and he sought more in life than farming and wanted to learn Torah. That was his drive and his passion. He cried again and again, eventually abandoned home at the instructions of Eliyahu Hanavi, came to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Rosh Yeshiva of the great yeshiva in Yerushalayim, before the Churban. And there was a complicated introduction, and as you recall, he was completely ignorant. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai teaches him the rudiments of halacha, and he spends great time working on it. He's a regular faster. He cries 5 or 6 times. Rabbi Eliezer, he fasts quite a bit. Finally, he, and this is, we were up to just after this point. This is what preceded the conclusion of last year. because he hadn't eaten, he had awful breath. Bad breath, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai kind of positioned him a little far away so he could withstand the conversation. And then he cries, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks him why he's crying, and he says, "I'm crying because you stood me against you as if I were mukashchin, as if I were afflicted with the worst kind of boils," which is a great challenge to his Rebbe. And this is a theme throughout the Sagarata, that Rabbi Eliezer is tough-minded, challenging, oppositional towards his father, and abandoning his father because of his desires for Limud HaTorah. And he's, to some extent, oppositional towards Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is pretty surprising because he wants to be integrated into the yeshiva, and he's accusing Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai of marginalizing him from the yeshiva, keeping him at a distance. And that tough-mindedness, that independent-mindedness is what I think at one level enabled him to succeed as he did. That incredible drive, come what may, forget about family, wealth, I want Torah. That drive and tough-mindedness enabled him to succeed. But it also, you might say, haunted him throughout the remainder of his life, because it led to the great controversy over Tanur of Achnai, and he was placed into Cherem, and then the question of whether he could reconcile with his Talmidim. That whole independent streak built him, but also traumatized his life, if I could put it in those terms. In any case, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, gives him a bracha, just like you have this awful bad breath, reach peh, so the reach of the chukei HaTorah that you learn should go to Shemayim. So this is a further deepening of the relationship. Remember I said last time that the relationship between a Talmud and a Rebbe is not unilateral, it's bilateral, and Rabbi Eliezer clearly undergoes very considerable growth, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's relationship changes with Rabbi Eliezer's growth. So there is a mutuality of development and transformation, which characterizes this biography of Rabbi Eliezer. So first of all, for the first time, he calls him Bini, my son. That's a significant change in a relationship from, oh no, I can't stand being next to you, or, without the distance. Now he's Bini, he's his son, and he gives him a bracha. So this is reflects not only the change in Rabbi Eliezer's status, but the change in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his Rebbe's relationship. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai continues to evolve in his relationship with Rabbi Eliezer, so it's fascinating. It's not just the Talmud changes, but if a Talmud is very close to a Rebbe, the Rebbe changes in relation to the Talmud. That's true with every teacher and student. If you have a close student and you see the student grow, the teacher is going to grow in tandem if it's a healthy, growing, vital relationship and a caring relationship together with the student. So now that they have achieved, well, so he says, Amar lo, we're the page Resh Gimel, the third line from the bottom, fourth line from the bottom. Amalo. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says to Rabbi Eliezer, Ben Miata, whose son are you? Does that sound familiar? It should, because he asked him that question before. And did Rabbi Eliezer answer the question then? He did not. So why is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asking him this question again? He didn't get an answer before. Why does he think he's going to get an answer now?
Maybe they're closer now.
Exactly correct. The initial question was, a new Talmud is coming into the yeshiva. Who are you? I guess he didn't want to answer it. But now that he's already in the yeshiva, and he's gotten a bracha, and he's been called B'ni, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai feels that their relationship has evolved to the point where he can re-ask the question. And as we will see, Rabbi Eliezer is now capable of answering the question. Amalo ben Hurkan Asani. I am ben Hurkanus. By the way, I think that now that he calls him B'ni, then he says ben me ata. Notice the play. In other words, now that you're my son, I can ask you who your biological father is. In other words, the very fact of that he's asking, you might say, more empathetically. Like a father wants to know more about his son. You know, how was your day in yeshiva? How did things go in school? Getting along with Shmuel, the kid who was bothering you the other day. It's a father asking in care for a son, not a Rosh Yeshiva saying, you want admission to my yeshiva? Like, who are you? So notice how the very same words in an evolving relationship can have a very different meaning.
He's also kind of changing the question, because beforehand you could say that the reason why he wasn't answered is because Eliezer felt that, you know, that's my identity and you're going to look down on me for that. Now that he's saying, you know, he's changing the question, he's making it that when you answer, this is not who you are. You are B'ni, right? He's changing
the right,
who
he good. Is. Yes, right. Excellent. The frame is different.
Right.
The frame of the question. Very, very good. Okay, so I find, to my mind, this is really quite interesting. So he says, Ben Hurkanus on me. I am the son of Hurkanus. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, V'halo ben gedole olamata. You are the son of one of the greats of the world. V'lo ha'yisa magidli, and you didn't tell me who you were a son of? Amalo. He said to him, Chayecha, by your life, hayom ata soed etzli. Today you will be eating with me. So what's this about?
The red button's not recording?
Never mind
recording
either. Yeah, I think it stopped in the middle because of that call I got. Okay. In any case, so first of all, you see that that Hurkanus is really respected. Gedole Olam. It's kind of interesting. Because he was obviously not a Talmud Chacham. And in fact, not only was he not a Talmud Chacham, he was anti-learning. Vehemently anti-learning. And nevertheless, he was quite respected, which also tells you something about the social structure of life in that time. And
I didn't say he was anti-learning.
He was. He said, forget learning, you're 28, go to Hakmi and Shainik, go send your kids to yeshiva. And Rabbi Eliezer knew so little himself. Right. And as we'll see, he wants to put him in Cherem. So, well, let's see how the story is. He's pretty anti-learning. So the question is, why all of a sudden does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, gdole olam, you invite him to a meal? Like before that, he wasn't worthy of being invited to a meal? Like, what is that all about? Yes, Mendy?
Well, maybe now, I mean, I was going to ask the question, like, suddenly he cares. This is just the opposite of what you would expect from a father or a father figure. Is now, once he knows who he is, he suddenly cares more about him. But it might be a stretch to say it, but maybe because now that he knows who he is, He says, now we're at a closer point in our relationship. Just stay by me.
Yeah. Is it connected to Gedolei Olam?
It just seems like it's Tully on that, though.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying it is. Maybe it's connected to Gedolei Olam. That would be a pretty superficial reason to invite him over. Oh, you know, he owns 15 apartment buildings in Manhattan. I think I'm going to be Makarov him, kind of thing, you know, to my yeshiva, because maybe I can get a big donation. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that probably wasn't his kavana, I imagine. He was, you know, obviously an extraordinary tzaddik. But as we'll see, there was like a whole party later. So I don't know, maybe there was some fundraising going on in those days. I don't really know. As the Perek Beis unfolds. But in any case, I think it's, you know, the relationship is deepened. And now, maybe it's a little bit like, you know, the story with Yosef and the brothers and Paro. When Yosef divulges his identity, that he is not he's not an Eved, but he's the son of Yaakov. So Vayishma called, as I've got the lashon of the pasuk, Vayishma called Paro, or Yishma called Beis Paro or something, and I think Rashi there says that and Paro saw, oh, he's not such an inferior person, so he was very enthused about that. So it could be just the way of the world that he saw that he comes from a person, a family of great success, and so, you know, it was impactful. Anyway, we don't know. It doesn't say. So these are just all conjectures. Amarlo, so he invited to a meal. Amarlo, he said, "Mekfarsa adati etzel achsanya shali. I've already eaten at my host." He was staying at a host, staying somewhere for a meal, and he was staying somewhere, you know, where he was living somewhere. The yeshiva didn't have dormitories. So he said, "I've already eaten at my host." Now, that's not true as the story unfolds. So we need to understand, like, why is he telling what is an apparent lie? It's not true that he already ate. But let's analyze that after we finish. Amalo, miyu achsan yeshalcha, and who is your host? Amalo, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanani of Rabbi Yossi HaKohen. Staying at the house of these two people. Shalach v'shalach san yeshalo. Snar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai goes and sends to them. Amar lahem, he said to them, "Etzlechem sod Eliezer ayom? Did Eliezer eat with you today?" Amar lo, lav. No. V'lo yeshlo shmona yom shlo tam klum. There's 8 days, again, where he has not eaten anything. Acharei kein hochel Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanani, Rabbi Yoshua Kohen, Amar lo Yochanan ben Zakkai. They told Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, "Hariyesh lo ches yomim shlo tom klum." So this is now another stage in their relationship. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is now proactive. He doesn't just invite him for a meal. He wants to find out, where are you eating and where are you living? Again, this is a further deepening of their relationship. A Rebbe is now getting closer to his Talmud. It's not like you're in a dorm, okay. It's like, how are you making out in the dorm? And who are your roommates? And is the meal okay? And are you comfortable with your meal? So you see that this relationship continues to evolve. And he also sees, I think, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and this is a part of his transformation, I would guess, that being a Rebbe is not only about caring for the Torah and ruchnistic needs of your Talmidim. A good Rebbe cares about everything. That's the Rebbe Av model. He calls him a son. Well, he's not only an Av Ruchni, he's not only a Ruchniistic a father and teaching him Torah, but every person who teaches Torah has a responsibility for the overall well-being of his Talmud. And therefore, he now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I would argue, has a new conception of what it is to be a Rebbe. A Rebbe is an Av, and an Av, not only an Av over one's spiritual life of one's Talmidim, but over their overall well-being. And by the way, that's very common nowadays, particularly in yeshivas and Eretz Yisrael, you know, where Rebbeim get very involved in the lives of Talmidim. You know, you see this for the first time, I don't know if it's the first time, but you certainly see this very, very early on in Chazal, in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's evolving relationship with Rabbi Eliezer. You need to see that this is a new model of a Rebbe. It's not Rebbe just Torah. It's Rebbe Ben, Av Ben, cares about everything. Okay, so that's where we are at this point. Perek Sheni. Amru banav shel hukanas lavriyim. Steen changes. We're leaving the yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and we are in the back home in the farm. Hyrcanus' children say to Hyrcanus, Alei lecha liYerushalayim, unedei es binecha Eliezer minechsecha. Go up to Yerushalayim and excommunicate your son Eliezer from his property. In other words, they call him binecha. It's interesting, they don't say Eliezer. But they say you need to divorce yourself from Eliezer. Eliezer has divorced himself from us. He's no longer a brother. He's no longer working in the fields. He does not deserve to inherit any property. It's pretty sharp, you know, strong claim. I mean, they're working hard, so if you put yourselves in the farmer's mentality, if you put yourself in a farmer's mentality, then this guy is, a luftmensch. He's busy learning in yeshiva. He's not contributing to the welfare of the family. So, you know, you can put yourself in, they're working really hard. You know, they're working hard to the bone, and they're up at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning plowing the fields and doing what. And this guy is like, you know, having a good time in Yerushalayim. So they're resentful of him. So one can't understand it. But what this, to me, further demonstrates is what I call the incommensurate values that Eliezer has and his family back home has. They have no concept. They don't chop. They just don't get what.
At least about eating and probably sleeping very little.
Yeah, so obviously they don't. It's not the case that he's having a good time in Yerushalayim. He's not partying up there. But they have no concept of the value of Talmud Torah. They just don't get it whatsoever. As I say, I said last time, this is a little like, you know, the guy in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael who wants to say Shana Bet, Shana Gimel. Their father's saying, mother's saying, come on home, you have to go to college and work. I'm like, that. Now, nowadays, most parents appreciate the value of learning to some extent, otherwise they wouldn't let you go for Shana Aleph. But once upon a time, it was pretty unusual. And many parents, some parents, have just no concept whatsoever of what's so powerfully attractive about and important about the Beis Medrash. They just don't get it. And that you see that here, this family schism, this kind of a chasm between the family back on the farm and Rabbi Eliezer's new life. So, the Olah LeYerushalayim Lindoso, and he went up to Yerushalayim to excommunicate him, to cut him off from the family and his patrimony as heir to the fields. Umatzah Sham Yom Tov Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. And they come, and lo and behold, there was a good day, literally a festival, for Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. There was a big party going on, which maybe in some ways confirmed their fears. They go, and there's this big party. All the great people of the country were participating in this festival. And the Gemara and the Medrash mentions two people. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses v'Nakdimon Ben Gurion. Excuse me, three people. Ben Kalba Shavua. These three people. These were three famously, fabulously wealthy people of that era. Balama Nikar Shmo Ben Tzitzis HaKeses. Why is he called Ben Tzitzis HaKeses? Shaya Mesiv L'mayla Migdola Yerushalayim. He was sitting above the greats of Yerushalayim, as Tzitzis was sort of dangling down from the high, high, high seat that he sat on top of all these pillows and cushions, which reflected his power and honor accorded to him. Amru al Nakdimon ben Gurion shahayi lo mazon shlosha saim kemach l'chol echad v'echad shahayi b'Yerushalayim. He had enough food to feed of three saim, which is a large, large amount of flour, for every single resident of Yerushalayim. So he was like really wealthy. Amr Lava ben Kalba Shavua. Shahayi lo beis arba.
That's like the dog who was satiated. It's Rabbi Kiva's father-in-law, right?
Yeah, I think so, right. Shahayi lo beis arba kurin shel gagos tochanin bezav. Shaginos, tochanin bezav. He had a huge amount of gold, enough to cover four kurin of gardens of ground up of gold. So it was also another example. It's a huge field, and you could plant on it four kurin, which is a large amount of tefuah, and that's how much gold he had, and as the earth in that field. These are Gemara's accounts using their name for how fabulously wealthy they were, and they were all sitting around this party. So why was there a party? Like, what was the Yom Tov? We don't really know. It doesn't say why they were sitting around. I've seen some of Farshim say, I don't know on what basis, but this was a fundraising party. I mean, I don't know what basis. It was a dinner. This is like the annual Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai dinner in Yerushalayim, and he invited all these wealthy people to support the yeshiva, and he wanted to impress them. As the story goes, you'll see how he tries to impress them. So maybe it was a fundraising dinner. Maybe, you know, we don't know exactly for sure why they gathered together, but all these wealthy, prominent people in Yerushalayim are gathered together. And that's exactly when Hyrcanus shows up. Perfect time. Amar lahem. Amru lo, so they told Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hari aviv shel Rabbi Eliezer bo. But the father of Rabbi Eliezer came. What do you notice here for the first time? Look at the... Yeah, exactly. He calls him Rabbi Eliezer. He's been Eliezer all along. This obviously takes place sometime after he first arrived in yeshiva when he didn't know too much about Berachas HaMazon and Kriyat Shema. And now he's Rabbi Eliezer. So we don't know how much time passed. But some time obviously passed for him to steig and become the great Rabbi Eliezer that he became. It's a new stage in Rabbi Eliezer's life. Yes?
He did Yeridea.
Excuse me?
He just finished
Yeridea. Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, right. Okay. Amar lahem. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Asu lo makom. Make a place for Hyrcanus. Yasu lo makom. They made a place for him. Vahoshivu oso etzlo. And they put Eliezer right next to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Why did he do that?
But Eliezer, but his father.
Excuse me, they put Hyrcanus, I beg your pardon. They put Hyrcanus right next to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So why did they do that? What was the reason for that?
This is the first time that Hyrcanus is called his father.
Excuse me?
This is the first time there's a point where the first time that Rabbi Eliezer is called Bini. This is the first time that Hyrcanus is called Aviv Shel Rabbi Eliezer.
I don't know if there was ever an occasion. It's an interesting point. I don't know if there ever was an occasion for him to be called Aviv Shel. This is the first time he was together with everybody.
Moreover, this is also, this is like when you reference someone and you're like, oh, that's so-and-so's father. Like, usually you would say, oh, he's the son of so-and-so. So this is the first time.
That you're kind of switching the importance role. Yeah. Before it was like, he's secondary. Was coming from this great family. Now it's like, this is the father of this great
family. Okay, that's an interesting point. Okay, very good. He's the father of now Rabbi Eliezer, the great, great.
He's never been Rabbi Eliezer's father. Eliezer's always been Hyrcanus' son.
Right. Okay, so the question is, why did he sit him at the head of the table? What was the reason for that? Why at the head of the table?
And you already have all these rich big people. He's also big and rich. You said he's fundraising. That's a good.
Okay, that's one possibility. Yes. Another, what other possibilities are there? I don't think that's the only explanation.
He also the cover that his son accrued.
Yes, this is a crucial point. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai no doubt knew that there was an estrangement between, or very likely knew there was an estrangement between Rabbi Eliezer and his father Hyrcanus, and maybe he felt that this is a way of bridging that gap and bringing the two of them closer together by giving him such kavod and showing Hyrcanus, look at what your son has achieved. You can bring him back to your family. He doesn't have to be estranged from you. Look at what he's achieved. So this may be an attempt on his part to, bring them together. And that would be part of his responsibility as a Rebbe father to bring peace to the family. How many Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael that try to bring peace between young men who want to continue learning in Eretz Yisrael and parents who don't like that idea? Same thing over here. He's trying to bring them together. Another possibility is that maybe he understood that this is the only currency Hyrcanus understands, kavod. Give him kavod. That is a currency that he understands, which, in fact, as the story unfolds, seems likely the case. All right. Nasan ein of Rabbi Eliezer. Now Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai places his eyes, looks at Rabbi Eliezer. Amarlo, and he says to Rabbi Eliezer, Emar lanu davar echad min ha-Torah. Say for us, Edvar Torah. Apparently, when they had this gathering, it was not uncommon to call upon a star Talmud to give a shiur. Now, if this is a fundraising dinner, that makes a very good sense, because you want to show the fruits of your investment, that you give money to this yeshiva, and look at all the Torah that this yeshiva produces. And in fact, that's not uncommon. In a yeshiva dinner or something like that, it's not uncommon to have a student speak or an alumnus speak to demonstrate what the yeshiva has accomplished. So if it's a fundraising dinner, we don't know that, but if it is, then that would well explain it. But obviously, it's interesting, he chose Rabbi Eliezer, which is the first time he's been selected, apparently, as the story unfolds, it seems clear. So probably it was because Hyrcanus was there, and he wanted to demonstrate to Hyrcanus just how far his son had traveled. So what is his, Rabbi Eliezer's answer? It's fascinating, expected, and astonishing all at the same time. He says as follows, Amar lo, Rebbe, Emeshalacha mashal, I will give you a mashal. Lama hadavar domer, to what can this be prepared? Labar hazeh, she'eno yachal lahotzi mayim yoser mimashahaya motzi. You can't take out more water from a pit than was placed in it. Kachani, so too I, eini yachal lomar divrei Torah yoser mimashakibalti mimcha. I cannot say any Torah more than I accepted from you. In other words, this is Rabbi Eliezer's shitas halimud. He believed that chidushei Torah are dangerous, because chidushim, if it's a chiddush, maybe it's not true. Maybe it's not what the original intent of Moshe Rabbeinu was, the original intent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. It's a chiddush. It's my own chiddush. So in this respect, he was close to the Shita Shammai, who disagreed with Hillel, and that was a part of the Malachos between Shammai and Hillel. Hillel was a great Chachan. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a part of the Hillel school. There were great Chachanim. Yigyon Mido Shatar and Drashas Bahem. Hillel developed that, and Drashas bring about Chidushei Torah, new insights in Torah that weren't a part of the original Masorah. Rabbi Eliezer opposes that. If it's new, it's suspect. And I can't say any Chidushei Torah that I didn't get from you. And therefore, I can say no Chidushei Torah, by definition. Because I will never say any Torah that I was not Makabel from my Rebbe. Rebbe Eliezer insisted on the purity of the Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's a matter of Mesorah. If I get it from my Rebbe, and his Rebbe gets it from his Rebbe, and his Rebbe gets it from his Rebbe, and his Rebbe gets it from his Rebbe, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, then we know we have the truth. As soon as human reason is invested in and plays a role in coming up with a halacha, we may be deviating from what the pure Torah requires. And so therefore this insistence on Mesorah and memorization, because Rabbi Yezer's great strength was his ability to memorize. Bor Sur, the Pirkei Avos says, Bar such eno ma'abe tiba. Whatever it got, it lost nothing. Eliezer was, do you remember, a credible masmid. He was the first person in the Beis Medrash. He says of himself, the last person out of the Beis Medrash. He learned and memorized and memorized and amassed a massive amount of Torah. And that was his strength. And he would be mechadish nothing, because to be mechadish is to deviate from the purity of that Mesorah, Rebbe Acher Rebbe, going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So he says, I'm not going to, you want me to say Chidushei Torah? I refuse. Now, so he is Lishitaso. We know this about him throughout his life. So in that respect, it's not surprising. That's a view of what Torah should be and how it should be taught. Pure Mesorah, no Chidushim, nothing, no creativity. But it's surprising also, because here, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asks him to give a shiur in public, and Rabbi Eliezer in public refuses to obey his Rebbe. It's not like his Rebbe off to the side says, "Would you give a shiur? I need somebody to give a shiur." Nobody hears it. Here he publicly asks him to speak, and Rebbe Eliezer publicly refuses. I mean, that's... And it's not just there are four people around. These are the most important people in Yerushalayim, the richest people, the most influential people in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, probably. And he just publicly disregards his Rebbe. Now he does it with a mashal. He speaks like a Talmud Chacham, the Talmud Chacham he is, with a mashal and back and forth. But it's a remarkable thing. And this, again, speaks to Rebbe Eliezer's independence of mind. He just doesn't kowtow to conventions. Doesn't kowtow to what's expected of him. He has his shittas, and he follows those shittas without deviation. Strength, also what contributed to his ultimate demise, that very, very same quality. What's ironic, by the way, is that he married the sister of Rabban Gamliel, who was the Nasi of Klal Yisrael. So he eventually became fully integrated into the leadership of Klal Yisrael. And nevertheless, he has this sort of oppositional stance. I do my own thing, and this is what I believe. It's fascinating to me, really fascinating. Okay, so it continues. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responds, Amar lo, em shalachal mashal. I will respond to your mashal with my own mashal. Which is an interesting way of responding. Lamaha davar doma. To what can this be compared? L'ma'ayin zeh shehu noveya u'motzi mayim. To a fountain, spring, which flows and brings forth water. V'yesh b'kocho l'hotzi mayim yoser mimashu machnes. And it can generate more water than is placed in it by any person, I think it means. A flowing spring... It's not the water, it flows not because you dump water into it, because there is an ongoing water pressure from below which keeps on feeding it more and more water. Kach ata yachal lomer divrei Torah yoser mimasha kiblu b'Sinai. So too, you can say Torah more than was accepted at Sinai. The model is not a bar sud, that enom abetipa, pit, which is sealed, doesn't lose anything, but you can't take out more than what's put in. That's not the model of Talmud Torah. The model of Talmud Torah is not the retention of the past. It is also the creation of new Torah. It's a radically different way of understanding Talmud Torah. Is Talmud Torah about retaining the purity of the past, or is it also about not only retaining the past, but creating new resources of Torah as new circumstances and new insights arrive? Now, of course, we in the yeshiva world today are the heirs to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Hillel's Shita, but this was Rabbi Eliezer's Shita. There's a fundamental machlokas about how to understand the goal of Talmud Torah. Is it exclusively preservation, or is it not only preservation, but also creativity? And he specifically says, more than Sinai. Doesn't have to be. This, of course, what does this remind you? The famous... Agada about Rabbi Akiva. What's the famous Agada about Rabbi Akiva? And Rosh Rabbeinu comes down to Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva, and he doesn't understand what Rabbi Akiva is teaching. This is that is another expression of the same Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ideal. And Rabbi Akiva, of course, is the Talmud of Yochanan ben Zakkai and the opponent of Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Akiva, Chidushei Torah, even Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know it and understand it, and that's fine. Model of Talmud Torah is a different one, and it's one really that drives our own learning today. Now, so we have this machlokus between Rebbe and Talmud, which is pretty interesting. Amalo. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says something that I think is profoundly insightful and reflects deep wisdom, to my mind, if I can say so, lani yazdaiti. Shema mimeni atam is bayish? Maybe the reason you don't want to say Chidushei Torah is because you are ashamed before me. Hareinei omein me'etzlecha, I will get up and leave. Amad Rabbi Yochanan v'halach lo luchos. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets up and he goes outside. Now, you may have had this experience yourself. Your Rebbe, you know, your Rebbe asks you to say a Chiddushei Torah in Shir. It's hard for you to do that because, you know, your Rebbe has such towering knowledge. He knows so much more than you. He will see through immediately to the possible weaknesses of your argument or your teretz or your kashi or your chabura. And you're like embarrassed to say something before him. You know, I mean, who are you to say something in front of your Rebbe? He knows so much more than you. He is so much sharper than you. He'll see the problems immediately while you're saying. By the way, how many of you here say chaburas? If you're the part of the base medrash? So Rebbeim are usually not present because it's stifling. When I said chaburas in yeshiva also, the Rebbeim were not present. It was a chabura of guys. It's stifling to have your Rebbe, you know, in front of you. And Rebbe Yochanan Zakkai sensed that, which I think is a very profound wisdom. A great teacher must know when to lead. Know when to separate from his Talmud and allow his Talmud to grow independently. That's one of the great challenges of a Rebbe and a Talmud. A Rebbe always wants to teach and teach and teach and correct the Talmud and correct the Talmud, and if he says something wrong, he wants to get in there and say, that's not right. But the Talmud will never grow if the Rebbe's always looking over his shoulder. The Talmud needs space to argue, to make mistakes, to grow. It's not just in Rebbe Talmud. It's in all learning, any kind of learning. There needs to be a space. There needs to be caring investment on the part of a teacher or a Rebbe. There needs to be space to give the student opportunity to make his own mistakes and to be his own person. Otherwise, he's always suffocating in the presence of his Rebbe. And not just making mistakes, but everybody's brain works a little differently. And if you are completely overshadowed by the brain of your Rebbe, you can never learn with your own derech that works for you, given the mental capacities and intellectual capacities, cognitive capacities that you have. You need to form your own derech. Every person needs to form his own derech. The Rebbe's always over your shoulder, that can't be. So I think that's partly what Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai is looking at here, and I think it's just a profound insight into teachers and students. Every teacher must ultimately abscond, must remove himself, leave the room to allow for the emergence of his Talmud. And that's what he does. Now what happens is very surprising at one level. V'hoya Rabbi Eliezer Yoshe V'doresh. Rabbi Eliezer was sitting and darshaning. Uvpanav Be'iros K'or HaChama V'karnosav Yotzos K'karnosav Shal Moshe. His face was illuminated like the light of the sun, and the rays went out like the rays of Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember he said you can say Torah more than Moshe Rabbeinu taught. This is like a new, and the language here. What happened at Har Sinai? There were brilliant lights, right? There was lightning. The way the Medrash describes it, it's like a new Har Sinai. New Moshe Rabbeinu, hearing new Torah that was never heard before. V'ein adam yodea im yom v'im laila. His chidushim were so brilliant that it illuminated the room and people couldn't tell the difference between day and night. Powerful image of a new revelation in Har Sinai. New Kolos Ubrakim. New Torah. Bar Rabbi Yochanan Me'achorav, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai comes from behind him, Unishako Al Rosho, and he kisses him on his head. Amalo Ashrechem Avram Yisaf Yaakov Sheyatzazem Echalatzechem. Fortunate to you, Avram Yisaf and Yaakov. Such a person has descended from you. So this, to my mind, this is, image is a beautiful and evocative image. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai gives him a kiss. Who gives kisses? Fathers give kisses to their children. This is a sign of great love. Where does he kiss him? The front or the back? He kisses him from the back. So this is kind of a brilliant, you know, he's invisible to the Talmud. He suppresses himself. He kisses him like a father, but he's behind him. It's a powerful image of both love and restraint. He loves him, but he restrains himself. And that, to my mind, is the height of Rebbehood. Love that a Rebbe has for a Talmud. He kisses him, but he restrains himself. He lets his Talmud grow to be the person he can be. Very powerful image, kissing him from behind. Now I have a kasha to ask you. And I think this is a crucial, crucial question to my mind. Why is Rabbi Eliezer saying all these chidushim? What is Rabbi Eliezer's shitas halimud? What was his mashal?
That you can't say any chiddushim.
You're not supposed to say any chiddushim. Torah is about preservation. Rebbe goes away, all of a sudden he's now saying chiddushim Torah. That's contrary to his shita. What is he? I mean, obviously, Chas v'Shalom, he's not a hypocrite, but it sounds hypocritical. Now, you have the shita, I will not say Torah, I will not, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai leaves. Okay, all of a sudden, you're saying Chiddush HaTorah. How do you...
It sounds like this is what his Rebbe wanted.
Excuse me?
It sounds like this is what his Rebbe wanted him to do.
This is what his Rebbe wanted him to do. But this is against his own shita, as he professed it himself, and as we know throughout his life. So why is he contravening his own shita salimah? You all hear the question? I think it's a serious kasha. Yeah.
His own shita was preserved, but his Rebbe's shita was mechadish. So by not being mechadish, he's not preserving.
By not being, no, these are new chiddushei Torah coming out. This is, he believes you should not say new chiddushei Torah. You can only say what your Rebbe taught him. His Rebbe taught him he should say chiddushei that he should say it, but not these words of Torah. It's still inconsistent with his words of Torah. Eis lasos Hashem. I don't know. Eis lasos Hashem. What I see here, and you can think about this and let me know what your own view is, but what I see here is a fascinating challenge. Is it the case that there are some people who are blessed with extraordinary memories but have limited creative abilities? There's some people who are blessed with great creative abilities who have lousy memories. Different people have different strengths. You might argue... Rabbi Eliezer, what's his strength? This bar such enem abetiba. If you just saw that Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, what would you say his intellectual strengths are?
Retention.
His retention, his memory. That he was a bar such enem abetiba. He forgot nothing. Photographic memory, I don't know, but a memory that was fabulous. And you would think that since he's opposed to Chiddushei Torah, he believed that memory is the primary vehicle for Talmud Torah. What you see here is that that's not true. Rabbi Eliezer had the intellectual gifts to be mechadish like the best of them, like better than anybody else. Rabbi Eliezer's view of Talmud Torah was not driven by his intellectual abilities and limitations. It was driven by a deep shita, a deep ideology about how Torah must be taught. Rabbi Eliezer was a person of great creativity, but... he suppressed that creativity throughout his entire life in service of the purity of Torah. That's an amazing self-sacrifice. Can you imagine somebody who's a brilliantly gifted artist or musician who believes that music or art is a waste of time, even though he's incredibly talented, and he refuses to spend any time whatsoever in music or art because he wants to spend all day in the Beis Medrash? That's an incredible self-sacrifice. You have these great gifts, and you refuse to use them. And there, in that case, there are two different worlds, the Talmud Torah and art or music. Here, Rabbi Eliezer is pounding in the bass every day. First one in, last one out. He could be mechadish, incredible Chiddushei Torah, right there in the bass, but he refuses. That, for him, is not the right way to learn Torah. To my mind, that is a heroic act of self-sacrifice. It's one thing if you don't have the gift, so you just have a memory, so you just memorize. But he had incredible creative gifts. To my mind, that is a breathtaking act of heroic self-sacrifice, not to indulge those gifts that he felt were contrary to the way in which the purity of Torah must be preserved. To my mind, that is really, really heroic. It may have contributed to the maybe complications and conflicts of his inner life, which found their expression later. So you should think about that. If you have any your own thoughts, you let me know. But let's continue. I want to finish up. Haya Rabbi Eliezer Yoshev Vidoresh. I'm going to try to read quickly just to finish up. Haya Rabbi Eliezer Yoshev Vidoresh V'Aviv Omed Al Raglav. He was sitting in darshaning. His father was standing up. Kaven Sharah Aviv Omed Al Raglav. Eliezer, when Rabbi Eliezer saw that his father was standing, nifhal, he became tumult. You know, he was upset. Amalo, Abba, Shev, sit down, father. She'eni yachol lomar divrei Torah v'atolmei alagachas. It's not respectful for me to sit and say Torah and for you to stand. What does it tell you about Rabbi Eliezer's attitude towards his father? Kavod. I don't think that Rabbi Eliezer it would surprise me if Rabbi Eliezer had the same attitude early in his youth when he was rejecting his father. Rabbi Eliezer is now mature and evolved over time, and he's come to accept his father's limitations. He's a Torah person. Rabbi Eliezer devoted his life to Torah. His father is who he is. And as his father, he deserves respect. That, to my mind, reflects an evolution, I would suggest, I'm not sure, but probably, in Rabbi Eliezer's attitude towards his father. It's one of acceptance. He's not crying anymore. You don't understand me, father. You don't understand me, father. You are who you are. You are my father. You should not be standing when I sit. So there's another dimension to Rabbi Eliezer's evolution as a human being and as a great, great, great gadol in Talmud Chacham. Amar lo b'ni, lo al kein basi, I didn't come to hear you. El linadoscha min achasai. I came to excommunicate you, to cut you off from my property. V'ata shabasi l'roscha, now that I came to see you. V'ra'isi kol ha'shvach hazen, I saw all this praise you're getting. Now I am disinheriting your brothers, and you can get everything. What does he see? What does that word indicate?
He values kavod, no?
Yes! I see all the kavod you're getting, all the shvach. Hurkunis is the same man. It's kavod, it's wealth. He hasn't changed his mental frame, his set of values. It's all the praise you're getting that impresses him. It's not the Torah that he's saying, it's the praise. So there's still this huge gap between Rabbi Eliezer, who's living a life of Torah, and Hurkunis, kavod, wealth. But nevertheless, you got a lot of kavod, so I'll give you my property. Amalo. So again, this incommensurate worldviews. They have not changed. Rabbi Eliezer has accepted his father. And his father has accepted Rabbi Eliezer, but for the wrong reasons. He accepts his accomplishments because of kavod, not because of the valuation of Torah. Amalo. V'hare eini ani eini shava ke'echan mehem. I'm not worth one of your children. They're doing the work in the fields. I'm not working in the fields. I don't deserve it. Again, this is a kind of an aspect of Rabbi Eliezer's maturity and comfort with himself and comfort with his place in the world. I don't need to take my brother anything away from my brothers. They're doing all the work. Any shava kachas may not do any work in the field. Let them take it. See, that it's a great maturity in Rabbi Eliezer's part. Ilu karkos bikashti milifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ha'ilafan avlitein li. If I wanted property, Hashem would have given it to me. And if I had asked for Kesav Azov, Hashem would give it to me. I want one thing, and that is Torah. I don't care about wealth. My brothers can have all the riches in the world. They do not interest me. All I want is Torah. I have a question for you, and with this I'll conclude. Would you say this is a happy end or a tragic end? The end to this Agarata. Would you call it happy or sad?
To who?
Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, it's obviously an amazing end for Rabbi Ezra.
Right, excellent.
But if you're going to look at the family conflict, you know, he's kind of, you know, split off from his family. He's kind of in a different world now. So.
Excellent. Very well said. It is both happy and sad. It is happy in that Rabbi Eliezer has achieved his greatest vision of learning Torah. But nevertheless, it's sad in that the family remains fractured. That the father still doesn't understand him. He still doesn't understand why his son would want to be in the base, except for the fact that he's getting a lot of kavod. Doesn't appreciate Torah. Family is still fractured. The brothers are probably not happy with him, even though, of course, he's not taking any of their property. They don't get him. He doesn't really... He comes to appreciate them more and accept them, but the family is still broken. So it's both happy, glorious, heroic end, but it has a tragic side. And also, it's tragic as well in the following way. You see in Rabbi Eliezer's great achievements the seeds of his future demise. His commitment to principle, his oppositional quality, his individualism, his willing to stand up to the majority, which he did in Tana Rav Achnai, that determination, focus, inflexibility in his commitment to his own ideals, which he believes are absolutely correct, at great personal sacrifice, as we discussed, that ultimately led to his demise. And so encapsulated in the story of Rebbe Eliezer's earliest origin, you see the soil out of which his incredible, incredible greatness grew, but you also see the way in which that greatness is bound up with what ultimately led, with respect to Klal Yisrael, his demise and being placed in cherem and possibly even dying excommunicated. His life was complicated, and you see the complexity of that life, as well as his incredible greatness, incredible devotion to Torah. You see all that in the very earliest origins in the story of his life. Huh? Isn't it interesting? I thought it was fascinating.